Hello, I'm Robert Hurt, your host for this NASA Spitzer Space Telescope podcast, part of a series highlighting recent results in infrared astronomy. As endings go, few are more dramatic than when a massive star ends its life in an apocalyptic supernova blast. This explosion is so violent that for a brief time, it outshines the rest of its own galaxy. All that remains of the star is a tiny corpse in the form of a neutron star. One might think that this would be the ultimate end of anything else in the system. However, astronomers have discovered that, like a phoenix rising from the ashes, there may be new beginnings even here. Today we're speaking with Dr. Deepto Chakrabarty.
Hi, Robert.
And Zhongzhang Wang.
Hello.
They're both from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and they're here today to share some interesting results on one such system.
Thanks for having us here.
Could you start by just summarizing what you found for us?
We used the Spitzer telescope to observe a young X-ray pulsar.
Pulsar being a pulsar. Neutron star remnant from a supernova.
That's right. It's a relatively young neutron star that was formed about 100,000 years ago. And using Spitzer, we found evidence for a debris disk of material left over from the supernova explosion that formed the neutron star.
A debris disk of material, one would think that when such explosion occurs, it would actually sweep out material from the system. Where would this material have come from?
Well, when a massive star dies, when it collapses to form a neutron star, the inner core sort of bounces and it blows off the overlying material. The outer part of the massive star gets blown away, and that's called a supernova explosion. And indeed, one would naively think that that process would sweep away all of that material. But it's possible, if the explosion isn't strong enough, that some of the material doesn't escape the gravity of the neutron star and can fall back in toward the neutron star. We call that fallback material. It's never been observed before, but it's been predicted by many theorists studying supernova explosions. If the original massive star was spinning fast enough, then that material won't fall directly back onto the neutron star, but may instead form a disk. And so what we think we've found is a disk of this debris material that's left over from the explosion that formed the neutron star.
So you say this actually was predicted by astronomers before. So in a sense, you've actually confirmed something that had not really been nailed down yet in the science.
That's right. For about the last 20 years, a number of people doing numerical models, computer models of supernova explosions, kept finding that there ought to be some material that was left over, but no such material had ever been observed. So this is the first evidence for that. We haven't proven yet that this is supernova fallback material, but we're very excited because this is the first evidence that the theorists had done their calculations correctly.
And exactly how massive is this disk?
It's about 10 times the mass of the Earth is the amount of material that we estimate is in the disk. And whereas that sounds like a lot, I mean, the Earth seems like a lot of mass to us, the mass of the star that collapsed to form the neutron star was probably at least 8 times the mass of the Sun, and the Sun is over 300,000 times the mass of the Earth. So 10 Earth masses is really a very, very small fraction of all the material involved in the explosion.
You said the star was about 100,000 years old, and presumably the debris disk as well. How long would you expect such a disk to survive?
We estimate that the disk could survive for at least 1 million years. Which is why we are fairly confident that it's probably material from the supernova explosion. If its estimated lifetime was much shorter, then it would have had to have somehow formed after the supernova explosion.
This isn't, however, the first time we've ever detected something around neutron stars before, correct?
That's right. Actually, quite surprisingly, the first planets that were ever found outside of our solar system were found around a very old pulsar or neutron star, which was a big surprise to everyone involved. And there was a real puzzle as to how planets could have formed around a neutron star, again, because, as you commented before, you would expect a supernova explosion to maybe sweep out all of this material. So when the planets were discovered around a neutron star a number of years ago, it was suggested that the only way to do this might be to have some kind of debris disk from which planets could form. So this is also, we're excited about our result because it seems to provide a path to explaining how planets could form around such old dead stars.
What about the possibility of planets forming out of this disk? Do you have any thoughts about how long such a sequence might take, or perhaps this is a disk that itself won't form planets?
We don't know that for sure. Given that the planets have been detected around at least one pulsar, this seems like a plausible place that planets could form around a pulsar, but we don't really have a good way of estimating how long that process might take.
It may take like 1 million years to form a planet based on the other observations. For example, the planet around the young stars.
What Zhongzhang is saying is that just by analogy with protostellar disks, you might expect it could take as long as 1 million years for a dust disk like this to condense into planets.
So it may be that this is still too young in the process to have fully finished forming planets.
Yeah, that's right.
So this is the first disk that we've discovered around a neutron star. Are you continuing to look for others? Do you think you might have an opportunity to find more of these?
it would be very hard because for this source, it has very strong X-ray emission. So due to the X-ray irradiation, so we can see the disk. But for other young neutron stars, they are very radio bright, but we don't have such bright X-rays to illuminate the disks.
So the radio illumination really isn't sufficient to in any way heat the disk up to the level that Spitzer could detect it, whereas the X-rays will give you that illumination.
That's true. This object really made it easy for us because it is a bright X-ray source. As I said, it lit up the disk and allowed us to see it. There may well be disks like this around other young pulsars that aren't bright X-ray sources, but they'd be much more difficult to detect because they wouldn't be lit up and would be fainter. We're going to use Spitzer to look at some of the nearby young radio pulsars to see if we can detect evidence of disks around those systems as well. One possibility is that the radio pulsars, even though they aren't X-ray emitters, they emit a strong particle wind, sometimes called a pulsar wind. And it's possible that that pulsar wind, which does contain a lot of energy, but isn't normally electromagnetic radiation, that pulsar wind might be also able to heat up debris disks, although it might do so in a different way. We're not sure, and there hasn't been much theoretical work done in this area, so we're not sure what to expect. But we're going to use Spitzer to explore that, and we're hoping that this is just the tip of the iceberg, and that we'll detect many such disks around other pulsars.
Well, some of the most exciting science comes in when we don't know what to expect. So I hope that you come back with even more exciting results.
Thanks very much, Robert.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for speaking with us today. Today we've been speaking with Dr. Deepto Chakrabarty and Zhongzhang Wang from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. To find out more about this topic, make sure to visit our website at www.spitzer.caltech.edu. There you can browse our image galleries, read about the latest results, and subscribe to our email newsletter. This podcast is produced by the Spitzer Science Center at the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena, California. The Spitzer mission is managed by NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, also in Pasadena. For the Spitzer Science Center, I'm Robert Hurt. As always, thanks for listening.